You were not counting on somebody with a big mouth talking today, were you? Boy, it is great to be here today. What a privilege, and I mean that. What a privilege it is to get to share today with you. I'm honored and humbled that I was called on. Notice that Jim was the one who called me, and then he's not here today. I don't know what that means exactly. No, he is quite ill, and we need to remember him. It's very serious whenever he has any kind of a thing with his heart at this situation. I want to talk today. Proverbs 25 was what I was assigned. And if you preach in Proverbs, you've probably noticed, because you've been doing Proverbs for 25 weeks now, the chapters don't necessarily hang together all that well. He jumps from subject to subject to subject to subject. And so as I looked at it, I first tried to figure out a way to bring it all together. Then I saw three or four different things I wanted to bring out. And I kept praying about it and asking the Lord, what do you want me to concentrate on? And there was one verse that really came out that I want to share with you today. It's Proverbs chapter 25, verse 11. And let me just read that from the NIV. A word aptly spoken is like apples of gold in settings of silver. That's kind of tough. Aptly spoken, what does that mean? Well, go to the Message sometimes if you're a little confused by the NIV. And this is how Eugene Peterson translates it in the Message. It says, the right word at the right time is like a custom-made piece of jewelry. The right word at the right time. That's what I want to talk about. You could entitle this message, The Right Word at the Right Time, or Watch Your Mouth. Because that's what it's about, watching your mouth, watching where your mouth goes. How many of you have been involved in Little League over the years, or Bambino, or whatever? How many of you have ever seen a coach, parent that was a real jerk, a real weenie, and, you know, just tore people down, tore the ump down, tore the other team down, tore his own team down? How many of you ever have been that jerk from time? Yeah, well, I got a jerk story, a baseball jerk story that I think is about at the top. When we still lived in Clarksville, the last year that we were there before we moved to Kokomo, my son was playing baseball at the Clarksville Little League, and they had a little different situation than we do here in Kokomo. They had a 9- and 10-year-old league. It wasn't like a minor league, a farm team, the other. It was a 9- and 10-year-old league, and my son was a 10-year-old, and he was a pitcher, and he was a pretty good pitcher. And those kids, the 9-year-olds, the first time they ever saw another kid pitch to them. So you know how that goes. They're pretty worried, pretty scared. And we were undefeated, and it was about halfway through the season, and we played the Cubs. I don't know what it is about that name, but, you know. They were having a tough season, as always. But these Cubs were having a tough season, and part of the reason was we discovered their manager, because this is a true story what happened. Jared was striking people out because they were afraid to stand in with him. They kept bailing out. And a lot of them were just being called out on strikes because they wouldn't even swing at the ball. They were afraid to even try to swing at the ball. And the manager was getting madder and madder and madder, and he was yelling at them after every at-bat that they had. You got to swing. You're not Nolan Ryan. You got to swing the bat. Finally, his son was up for the second time. The first time up, his son was called out on strikes. Now, he was one of those manager's sons that's not the star of the team. You know, but his dad wanted him to be the star of the team. And so he was determined his little boy was going to do what he said, and he was going to get a hit. A little 9-year-old boy, he stood in there, and he tried so hard. But when the ball came, he's bailing out, you know, and he's clear out of the box. It's strike one. And so his dad comes out and screams at him, just gets right in his face, you know, like that, and puts him in the batter's box, puts him right up by the plate, crowding the plate, toes practically over the line, you know. And Jared goes to pitch, and as Jared pitches, the kid starts like this. As Jared goes into his windup, the kid's backing up. He's trying so hard. You can tell by looking on his face, he's trying to stay in there. And, of course, by the time the pitch came by, the kid was clear out of the box, and he forgot to swing again. And his dad was so mad, he jumped up and down. He came out there and he grabbed the bat out of his kid's hand. He said, "You don't need this bat. You just stand in there without it." And he walked off with the bat. He said, "Go on." He looked at the umpire and he said, "Go on." The umpire was a 16, 17-year-old kid and was usually a pretty good umpire. But what umpire had ever been confronted with this situation before? And so everything just kind of stops. Jared is pitching. He looks over in the dugout at me and I'm going like this. I looked at our other coach and we're both going like this. And he looks at the umpire and the umpire's going, "You know, I don't know what to do." So finally he said, "Okay, go ahead and pitch." And Jared threw another ball and got the kid out. And the kid was standing there in the batter's box just like this and just bawling, just sobbing. And the inning was over. The words of that father. I don't know how, I wonder how their relationship, we moved at the end of that season, so I didn't know what happened after that, but I wonder what kind of relationship that father was ever able to rebuild with that son. I wonder whatever happened just because he got so upset and he had to shoot his mouth off and scream at his kid and be so determined that his kid was going to be the example. Well, the father became the example, the bad example. All the rest of us felt like pretty good dads after that, even at our worst moments, you know. Well, words can be weapons, or they can be tools. Words can be weapons that devastate, as that father devastated that little boy that day. Or words can be tools that make something beautiful. I just want to talk about the right word today. The right word has to do with the content of what you say. With the content of what you... Now, that's not really brain surgery. Duh, Ray, of course. Saying the right word has to do with what you say. That's true. It has to do with that content. But I think it's important because we get to choose the content of our words. I know sometimes stuff flips out before we even... You know, we wish we could pull it back in, you know. Wouldn't you love to be a cartoon character where the words appear in a bubble, and if you didn't like them, you could pull them back in your mouth and start over, but we don't get that. But we have the opportunity and we have really the challenge to choose what we say. And we need to choose words that build up. If our words are going to be apples of gold in settings of silver, as this talks about, we need to choose what we're going to say, that they're going to be words that build up the other person instead of tear down. There could have been other ways that dad could have tried to get that kid to stand in. There was going to be another game. Jared was going to pitch against him again. There'd have been another chance. It's also not only what you choose to say, but it's to choose not to say some things. Some of us are really good at sarcasm. Now, when I talk about this today, I want you to know I talk from great experience because I was one of the smartest mouth guys you could ever imagine. And then the Lord called me to the ministry, and all my friends are going, "Who, you?" And I was with them because I thought, "Who, me?" But there were some things I had to learn. And a big thing I had to learn was what not to say. And one of the things was I love to be sarcastic. Maybe you do too. I mean, I'd love to pin people with sarcasm. And I had to really try to quit doing that. I had to really take that out of my vocabulary at least 90%. Because sarcasm, that's a tool that I don't know how you use it. It's got to be a weapon because I don't know how you can use that to build anybody up. You have to be careful when you're teasing others. My old man, one of the great teases of the world. I mean, he picked me apart, and then picked other people apart, picked his kid apart a lot of the time. And I just grew up with that teasing, and I thought that was normal. And when I got to be in my early 20s, I realized that that's not normal, and that's not the way to treat people. And it can get to be such a habit, especially with the people we love the most, to tease our wives, and they're vulnerable. I mean, we see them in every situation. They're vulnerable. It's easy to tease them. And I'm not talking about once in a while having a joke with them, but I'm talking about having a joke on them, especially in front of other people, wives and children too. Gossip. Of course, I know men don't gossip, so this will be easy for you to refrain from, because men don't talk about other guys or other situations. But here's what I want to say about gossip, and that is, just because something's true doesn't mean it has to be repeated. Because guys will say, oh, I don't gossip. Everything I say is true. Well, yeah. But there's another layer of thinking when you decide what you're going to say about somebody else or about a situation at work or at home or in the neighborhood or at your church or in the club. And that is, not only is it true, but is it helpful? Is it kind? Another thing we need to choose not to say is, and you'd expect a preacher to say this, swear words. I have to tell you that when I came to the Lord, I was only 12 years old, but I was one of the world champion cussers. I was the junior league champion cusser. I could fill the space with blue words because I learned them from my old man. When I gave my heart to the Lord, He took that away from me in 2 weeks. First of all, because I asked Him to, because I knew that wasn't right. And second of all, because I hung out with guys that didn't cuss. And they were bigger than me, and they'd hit me if I did. So that really helped. But, you know, that kind of short-circuited helped the Holy Spirit to get me out of doing that. But guys, most men start cussing when they're about that age because they think it makes them macho. Well, how macho, how hard is it to say a four-letter word? In fact, it's much more macho sometimes to find something else to say. Some people use cuss words instead of adjectives. And to me, that says, don't you know an adjective? You know, don't you know how to describe something besides using a cuss word? I have a story about that, but I'll save it for another time. The right word not only has to do with the content of what you say, but it has to do with how you say it, with the way you say it. How does it come out of your mouth? As guys, sometimes we don't work very hard on our tone of voice. When we talk to our children, when we talk to our employees, sometimes what we say isn't so bad, but the way we say it may not be so great. Usually our wives call us on that, and they work on training us. I've been married almost 32 years, and my wife's still working on training me on that, but we have to work on how we say things. What intonation carries nearly as much weight as the content of what we say? We need to learn to choose words with what they sound like to the person that's hearing them in mind. For instance, who do I want to pick on? Oh, Chuck. Chuck and I went to college together. And Chuck was having a problem. I'm making this up as I'm going along, okay? But Chuck was having a problem with girls. I know you can't imagine that, but he was having a problem with girls. And he said, man, what is wrong? What is wrong with what I'm doing? And he said, I tried to compliment the girl I was out with last night, and she slapped me in the face. I said, well, Chuck, what'd you say? And he said, I told her, for a fat girl, she don't sweat much. I made that up, but some of us are like that. We try to give a compliment, and or we start to say anything, and we don't think much about what it's going to sound like to the person that's hearing it. And I think that applies to our employees or employers as well, our coworkers as well as to our families, to think about how that person's going to hear it. I tell you what, as a pastor, several of you guys are pastors, you can say things with all sincerity and somebody's going to take it wrong, And you really have to work on hearing how people are going to hear what you say. Because if you're an employer or you're a pastor or you're a teacher, sometimes you have to correct people and you have to say things people don't like. And trying to figure out how to say that so that it doesn't sound like a personal reprimand, but is something that can give correction and the Lord can take on and make it as personal as He wants to in their lives. That's an important thing. Well, saying the right word has to do with content. It has to do with the way you say it. But the right word also has to do with when you say it. One of the Proverbs is about a cheerful song is like a curse in the morning, you know. When you say something has something to do with how people take it. Basic rule of thumb, I think, is encourage often and encourage publicly. Say, don't be afraid in front of other people to say good stuff. And on the other hand, an apt word, the right word, sometimes is a reprimand. Sometimes the right thing to say is to tell somebody they've screwed up. But a reprimand needs to be done privately and only when necessary. The right word has to do with when you say it, the tone of voice, what you say. But most of all, the right word has to do with the content of your heart. With what's inside there, with the content of your heart. Jesus told us that the mouth, what we say, reveals what's inside us. You know, I want my words to be palatable, to be tasty, because sometimes I have to eat them. And if you want your words to be palatable, you need to let the Lord salt your words. He said, you are the salt of the earth. And the words that we say ought to be salty. And I don't mean salty in the traditional way. I mean tasty. I mean so that it can come into people's lives and flavor their lives with encouragement or with the right kind of reprimand. You see, words reflect attitudes. They reflect who you are deep inside. Are your words like apples of gold? Or are your words more like road apples than apples of gold? You guys from the East, do you know what a road apple is? What would your wife say if I ask her that question? Are your words more? If I ask her if your words were more apples of gold or were they more road apples, what would she say? What would your kids say? You know, to control your tongue is very difficult. What would your employees say about how you do? Or your employer? What does your talk say about your relationship with the Lord? In James, the third chapter, there's a whole paragraph, whole section there about controlling the tongue. And if this is something you want to work on, you want to do some more Bible study on, I'd suggest you look at James chapter 3. It has a whole section there, and basically what James is saying is you can't do it by yourself. You got to have the Lord's help. The Holy Spirit inside you is the only way that your tongue can be controlled. He's the one who enables you to make the words that come out of your mouth into apples of gold. It's hard. A lot of the stuff that we've talked about, we've looked at in Proverbs, it's difficult. But it's worth it. And I want to tell you something that happened to me. 3 years ago, a lot of you prayed for me. You know, I was involved in, I had an accident, I fell off, had a fall out at IUK, and I broke my skull, and there for a while I didn't know if I was going to make it back or not. If I was, I couldn't concentrate. My head, hurt. I was dizzy for a couple of days. I couldn't move one side, and it was ugly. And as I was recovering, it was a long recovery. I was out of the pulpit for 6 months, and then I was only in part of the time for a while after that. And really, it was in doubt whether I was going to make it back or not. They even gave me an IQ test to see if I was going to make it back. And I'm proud to report I'm no dumber than I was before. I really am glad about that. But one of the things that happened when I was feeling really crummy is this young lady got in touch with my wife and I. She saw my wife's name on some website where she'd written something about children's ministry, and had Tina's email address, and she said, "Are you the Tina Hauser married to Ray Hauser, used to pastor in Pasadena, California a zillion years ago?" And Tina wrote her back and said, "Yes." And Tina wrote her and told her about my accident and stuff, and she wrote me, she wrote me an email, second or third email I got from her. It was very encouraging to know that somebody remembered you. Because when we left Pasadena, this girl was only 8 years old. And we were only there 3 years, and yet she remembered us and remember me. And get a load of this. This just blew me away. And she says, she's talking about a book that she was reading about giving everything, giving all your life to the Lord, and let the Lord work through all your life, including your tongue. But she said this. She said, "This reminded me so vividly of a sermon you once gave at Church of the Foothills." Now that blew me away, because she was 8 years old when we left there. I went, "What?" And it says, "You must have been preaching about surrender, because I remember you having a conversation out loud with the Lord on the platform. You thought out loud about the personal implications of giving Him the things He was asking for in your life. And each time you gave Him something, I remember your answer was eventually something like, 'Yes, Lord, it's yours, all of it, nothing held back.'" And I remembered that sermon because I've preached it a couple other times. I've preached it a couple times in Kokomo. But here's what really got me. She says, "I've never forgotten the basic message you were so passionately sharing. That sermon had a profound impact on me back then and has stayed with me all my life." This lady is now old enough to have, she has kids in high school. And she was 8. And I was blown away, because something I said turned out to be an apple of gold. And I was in the situation I was in, it made me feel good. It made me feel like, well, even if I don't even make it back, I did something. But as I thought about some more, I thought about, what about the times I left road apples instead of apples of gold? And it kind of humbled me and challenged me to keep trying to put things out that are apples of gold. It makes a difference. This girl is a children's pastor now in Sierra Madre, California, has about 200 kids that she's in charge of. And to think that I just had a small part of just something I said. And we got to see her this spring. We were out in California, got to see her for a few minutes. And I asked her, "Why do you remember us? You were just a little kid, and we were only there. Why do you?" And she said, "Because, Pastor Ray, you would always hug me, and you remembered my name." Folks, I hesitate to share this because I don't want to be, "Oh, look how good he did." Well, that's not what it is. What it is a cautionary tale. What we do and what we say, and what we say matters so much. Even if they're words that we would just say, big deal, I said that. You know what? What did it say? The right word at the right time is like a custom-made piece of jewelry. Thank you all. God bless you.